So the Advent reading for this week comes from Matthew 14, 22 through 33. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the crowds away. After he had sent the crowds away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter said to him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind stopped, and those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "You are certainly God's son."
Thank you, Harris's. Good morning.
Morning.
I wasn't going to forget. We're so glad you're here this morning. It's my privilege to get to open up week one of Advent as we study faith. And if you're like me, I'll give you some advice. It's okay that we change. Change is sometimes a good thing if there's a purpose to it, right? And so we'll take a break from Advent, or we'll take a break from Amos. We'll be back to it. But we start a good change here for 4 weeks, like Mike said, into Advent. If you miss one of these weeks, if you want to catch back up on Amos, highplainsharvest.org has it. Also, starting now, we're streaming these videos on YouTube. So you can follow High Plains Harvest on YouTube and watch the videos, or you can listen to them on the website. But we pause for a moment here, and it's okay to change and to go into Advent. And so, before we launch, what is Advent? Advent's a Latin word for coming. And we think about, we anticipate the coming of Christ. We do it in two ways. We remember the first time they waited for Christ to come 2,000 years ago. And we anticipate the second Advent, the second coming of Christ in the future. And why is it so important to us to study Advent? I think for me, if you're like me, it's to prepare our heart. We do things, we decorate, we see things with our eyes, and we touch things to realize, to recognize that this is special, to set it apart from the average day-to-day that we're so used to. Christ's coming is so monumental to humans that it changed the course of history. It changes how we see things and how we think of things. Work only gives us 1 or 2 days off from work. But doesn't it deserve more than that to think about? What does it mean to reflect on what it means for Christ to have come and to come again? So we join with us as we set time apart to be different, to reflect and to remember on God and his character. We're going to do it this year in 4 different studies in his character and concepts of the Christian faith. Faith, hope, love, and peace. Each one of those illustrates for us something about God's character, something that he's done for his creation, some way he wants to interact with his people, ultimately pointing us to Christmas Eve when we celebrate. What does it mean that God was born as a baby? He embodied those 4 attributes and more. Emmanuel, God with us. What does it mean to embody faith, hope, love, and peace? He did it for us. And so we take time to think about that. We see the manger, we see the decorations, and we're reminded of something that's so important. Not that these do something to us, they don't change it, but they remind us of the one who does change our lives. And if you're like me, December can get absolutely crazy and busy. Advent allows us to slow down, to remember what was important, to be intentional with our time and our thoughts, to remember the first coming of Christ and the ultimate second coming of Christ. Some practical ways we can do that. We have a devotional table over there I would strongly encourage you to spend some time as family reading a devotional together. What does it mean to engage your heart and your family's heart in what it means to be celebrating and anticipating the coming of Christ? I'd encourage you to look at those resources. Thank you, Shay, for putting those together for us. So today we get to study faith. As the Harris has read, we're going to study the story of Jesus walking on water and then Peter's response to seeing Jesus walk on water. I don't know about you, if you've studied Peter, he's a very relatable person. I find myself relating to him and his ways in which he responds so quickly, so humanly, so realistic. We get this in our mind that these apostles could have been maybe superhuman. They were able to forego the human emotion just simply because they were around Jesus. But we see today that that's not always true. Even Peter himself exhibits really high highs with faith, followed by real low lows with fear. We get this idea that faith versus fear is a choice that we can make. Maybe you've felt that in this crazy world of a cycle of faith and fear over and over. How do we practice faith over fear? We know that we're freed from the power of the enemy who would love to bind us in fear, and yet we get sucked into this cycle. How do we practice faith over fear? No matter how hard we try in our own might, we spiral into that fear cycle, sinking like Peter did, yet faith allows us to be restored and upheld. How do you come this Advent with your faith? How is your faith this morning? The question I want us to think about as we ponder this and we discover what is faith, would it have been easier, do you think this is true, it would have been easier for you to have faith in Jesus if you only saw the miracles? If you saw him walking on water, if you saw him heal the blind, would you have had an easier time believing in him? It seems like such a true statement, but we're going to find out that it might be a lie. So let's walk back through Matthew chapter 14 as we study what is faith and how can we practice having faith over fear. Starting in verse 22, immediately he made the disciples get out into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the crowds away. After he had sent the crowds away, he went up to the mountains by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. The story of Jesus walking on water comes right after he just fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And I find 2 things shocking before we start here. The first was that even after all of these miracles, all of what Jesus did, he went away to pray. How do we rest when we're tired? Here's a free little tidbit not related to faith. Jesus had plenty to do, but yet escaped to rest and pray. How do we find rest in a busy season? I can be guilty of checking out, becoming selfish, finding my own ways to recharge. Jesus got away and prayed. Multiple times we see that pattern. I think a warning as it ties to Advent is Christmas most definitely can be stressful or restful depending on how we approach this Christmas season. So Jesus, after performing one miracle, about to perform another, goes away to pray with the Father. But the second thing I think we see in this story is it's the Bible, another story of ordinary people responding to an extraordinary God. An unfathomable God interacting with ordinary people. The question, would it be easier if you believe in Jesus if you saw his miracles? I think when we begin to see what faith is, we're going to find that that's not true. These men, Peter and the 12 disciples, still had fear, still had doubt in their life, and they had just witnessed one of the greatest miracles of feeding 5,000 people with so little resources. So what is faith? Let's look at Hebrews 11 to give us a working definition of faith. Hebrews 11:1 says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." Faith is the conviction of things not seen. So by the very definition of Hebrews 1, it has to be something you cannot see for you to have faith in it. Being there to witness Christ and his miracles would not have increased our faith, would have increased our ability to be firsthand account, to be witness of something truly amazing. But the conviction of things not seen is an aspect of faith. And I can be guilty as anybody else. I want to see it. I want to feel it. I want to touch it to know it's real. But the author of Hebrews says, you will be a better witness to have experienced it. But to increase your faith, it's a conviction and something you cannot see. Jesus says in John 20, 29, blessed are those who have not seen and have believed. There seems to be an amount of faith of something you cannot experience, you cannot prove, but yet you choose to believe. Faith is the conviction of thing not seen. So we can ask ourselves, based on that, what are we placing our faith in today? The seen or the unseen? Are you clinging to something that you can touch and experience and have history in? Or the unseen, the blind faith? There's got to be more to it, though, than just a blind faith in something you don't understand. Have we heard the saying, a childlike faith? A child so easily can place his faith in something like a superhero dad, for example, right? I can do all things. I am a superhero. Or a child can believe that that table won't fall when a parent knows for certain that that table is going to fall because he has a childlike faith. He has a blind faith in something. So it's got to be something more than just something we cannot see. If we'll put up a triangle, this is a Josh special, so if it's no use to you, throw it out. This didn't come from Matthew, so this came from me. But I think faith requires three parts. And I think as we walk through it, we're going to see this. The three components maybe are in gold, and then three emotions that we'll see play out are in white. It takes conviction to believe. You have to have a strong belief in that thing. You have to be able to execute or exercise that emotion, that faith. But then the third one is that object that you place your faith in. The emotions will come up in a bit, but conviction to believe, the ability to exercise that faith, and then the object of that faith. And so when we think about the child, he passed two senses of the faith test. He wasn't trapped by fear. He was able to exercise his faith. He had great conviction that his dad was a superhero. But the object of his faith was lacking, wasn't it? So perfect faith is when all three become combined. A great conviction of what is true, done so without any doubt or hesitation on an object that's worthy of that faith. Perfect faith is one that is placed with great conviction and certainty, done without any fear, hesitation, or doubt on an object that's worthy of that fear, of that faith. And we see that if any one of those start to crumble, if even one of those start to fail, our faith is weakened. Hebrews doesn't answer it, but we know the answer. What is the most worthy object of our faith then? Hebrews 12:2 says this, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. Interesting that it says the author and perfecter of our faith, not the object of faith, but he is on display for the true essence of faith, the author and perfecter of faith. Hebrews 1:3 explains it. This you can take as some homework. And he, starting with Jesus, he, Jesus, is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by the word of his power, and he has made purifications of sin. Jesus sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. Might take a whole lifetime to understand exactly what that verse is describing. Jesus is the radiance of God's glory, Jesus is the exact representation of God's nature. That is the fullest definition of the most worthy object to place our faith in. The perfecter of our faith being the exact representation of God and his nature for us. We begin to realize that no earthly experience could ever match the worthiness of that object. What could you experience and count on that would pale in comparison to the exact representation of God's nature? We see in our story today the object of Peter's faith never changed. Jesus was the object, but his conviction and his courage and his fear and his doubt affected his ability to have faith in that object. So after feeding 5,000 people, Jesus goes alone to pray. The disciples are in the boat. Matthew 14:24 says this, "But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. And they said, 'It's a ghost.' And they cried out in fear." Can you imagine what a day it has been for them? The fourth watch, it's starting to get dark. What a monumental roller coaster of a day of faith. You see something walking on the water, probably in the distance. I think for the record, at that moment, fear is a very applicable emotion. To not know what's going on, to see something that you don't understand, I think I would have been easily scared. With their eyes, they're seeing something that they cannot explain. We've heard of flight or fight. I think this is fear or faith. They had to choose, and fear was a reasonable emotion. They had no reason to assume what they saw was an object of their faith. But in one sentence, in three words, they can replace that emotion of fear with faith. Something worthy of fear becoming worthy of faith. Matthew 14:27. "But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid.'" What relief those words could have been. "Oh, take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." In an instant, what was fearful became faithful. They found themselves at a crossroad, an opportunity to exercise faith over fear. Those crossroads happen every day. Will we choose to be filled with fear in a moment of truth, or can we fill ourselves with faith, a conviction of worship or a conviction of worry? We have to choose, exercise that faith. Peter's faith is tested. Verses 28 and 29. Peter says to him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come onto the water." And he says, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat. He walked on water and he came toward Jesus. What a high moment of faith. What courage and boldness it would have taken to proclaim that. Would you have had the courage to say, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come onto the water"? If I was honest, I don't know if I would have had the courage and conviction to be able to say that. 11 others chose to be quiet. But Peter, out of a conviction, "If it's possible, call me out." Peter executes faith without distraction or fear or doubt on an object that is very worthy of that faith. At that moment, he has great faith in Jesus. But it changes in verse 30. "But seeing the wind, he became frightened and beginning to sink. He cried out, 'Lord, save me.'" Faith became weakened the moment he had fear and doubt. Doubt begins to set in, and we begin to see the cycle of human emotion. I get this picture of Peter climbing out of the boat. His eyes are on Jesus. He's very faithful, but as soon as he steps out of the boat, fear begins to set in. He begins to see the waves and the water, the wind, all the things that were there before. When he was removed from the very object that provided him false security, when he gets out of the boat, he becomes very aware of the wind and the waves. But I think there's irony here. Who did he call out for rescuing of? When he began to become scared, he didn't dive back in the boat. He didn't ask the disciples to save him. He called upon the Lord. He knew the object that could save him. He had to choose who he had more faith in, the boat, what he experienced, or Jesus. Even when paralyzed by fear, he knew the answer. We know that fear produces doubt, fear produces distractions. Those erode the ability to execute your faith. Faith comes when we are free from distractions, free from fear, free from doubt, allowing us to have the courage to faith, to place our faith in an object that's worthy. Peter had courage until he feared and became distracted from the object of his faith. The beauty is that even when Peter failed his test, when he became distracted, the object of that faith never changed. He cries out to the object of true hope, "Lord, save me." When we're beat down in life, when we've hit rock bottom, are we crying out for the comforts that we're used to go back into the boat where we know it's safe, or crying out for the object that is worthy of our faith? It's human not to be perfect, to fail in those moments, to fail a test. But who saves us? Who restores Peter? Jesus. If I ask, think last time you felt overwhelmed, when you felt fearful, what brought you comfort? The honest answer would be Jesus, prayer with the Father, the author and perfecter of our faith, but it's human nature to revert to what we have experienced, the comfort. Comfort food, or the blanket in the movie, the alone time on the phone for me, the great escape from our problems, the momentary lapse of responsibility. But are we seeking the physical things that we can touch, or faith in one who is worthy of our faith? We ought to be mindful of our unconscious autopilot faith, the one that our body and our nature wants to revert back to. But here he cries out, "Lord, save me." And we see a beautiful picture of what Jesus does in verse 31. Immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand. He took him hold of him and he said, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" What a tough question to be asked. You of little faith, why do you doubt? What would your answer be? I don't know. I know better. It feels like a little kid's answer. The true answer is because the flesh had failed me. I operated out of fear instead of faith. But there's beauty in Jesus' response. Verses 27 and verses 30 and 31 are all connected. They put together that triangle. We have to choose to either be afraid or courageous. Verse 27 said that. But there is emotion that are leading us to either be distracted by fear and doubt or faithful. We have to choose to be afraid or courageous, because those emotions are leading us to either be distracted or faithful. We see that it takes courage to place our faith in an object that is worthy. Courage comes from the strong conviction of what is true. It all starts with knowing truth. How is your conviction to know what is truth and what is deception today? Have we put in the time to study and to know God's truth, His word, and His character, so that when the crossroad time comes, we know to execute courageously out of faith? Do you have the conviction to have faith in the unseen? Peter's faith was put through a full cycle of faith and fear. He feared the unknown when he didn't know what was walking on the water. Peter's faith was established, rooted in Jesus when he said, "It is I." Peter operated out of courage and asked to be brought onto the water. But Peter's faith was tested when the winds and the waves threatened him. Ultimately, unfortunately, Peter's faith failed him in a moment of weakness. He operated out of fear and not faith, but we see Jesus' response to Peter. Fear sank him, but Jesus stretched out his hand to save him, to restore him, to redeem him back from that fear and that doubt that sunk him. The perfect object of faith reaches out and upholds and restores him in the storm. What another example of a roller coaster of what they must have been thinking. Verses 22, 32, and 33 end with the opportunity to reflect. What just happened? Do you imagine sitting there next to your friends saying, like, "We're going to need a moment to figure out what just happened"? Matthew 14, 32 says this: "Then when they got into the boat, the wind had stopped, and those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'You are certainly God's son.'" After the chaos stops, after the fear subsides, the wind and the waves stop, emotions clear out, they get a moment to reflect. What just happened? In the same way, we in life can realize that when we compare ourselves to the object of that faith, we realize that it's ordinary people interacting with an unfathomable God. What just happened? We're reminded of this biblical truth that everything happens for a purpose. As they witnessed it, what was it that they were trying to learn? We see this intersection between fear and doubt being used for God's good. What they had feared turned into faith in what was unseen. They saw a man command the wind. He called Peter onto the water. They saw him save a fearful and doubtful sinking Peter. And they conclude, "Certainly you are God's son." How beautiful is it that even in human failure and doubt, God can be glorified in our praise. Even after human failure of fear and doubt, God's still glorified in our praise when they think back and reflect on the infinite worthiness of God. Fear is even redeemed when there's an opportunity to turn back and worship. In every failure, five different times in Matthew, we get the words, "You of little faith." It seems like in every failure, God allows for the opportunity to be pointed back away from that failure, back to the one who is worthy of that faith. We can learn from those failures. God continues to patiently demonstrate his love for his creation. He didn't rebuke Peter. He saves Peter out of the water. What a perfect time for "I told you so. You knew better." But yet with love, he lifts him and restores him and asks, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Multiple times following a miracle, we see the words that God says, "So that you will know that I am God." He leaves them after a failure of man, followed by the redemptive act of God restoring his people. He gives them a thing to remember, a place or a token, and he says, "So that you will know that I am God." What an opportunity to respond, even when failure and fear, an opportunity to remember and praise the one who is worthy. We get to remember God and his character and the way he's chosen to interact with his people. We have to ask, are we going to choose to worry or will we choose to worship? We know that we are freed from the power of the enemy, the one who would love to bind us in fear. This world tries to control us through fear, but we know the truth. We know that we can grow in faith and be set free How do we grow in practicing faith over fear? The story shows us that fear and doubt begins to sink us, but a perfect faith in an object that is worthy can restore us, putting faith over fear by practice. The opportunity to grow daily in the knowledge and the conviction to be able to execute. A deep conviction for truth, filled with courage to act, to execute without fear and doubt, without distraction, because we know that we have faith in an object that is infinitely worthy of that faith. We don't have to be told that this is counter nature. This isn't what comes easy. This is something that has to be practiced. The easiest way is for us to be distracted, to be filled with doubt and fear, to substitute genuine faith with something from this world that we can touch, that we can experience. That's our nature, to revert back. But we're called to something different. 2 Corinthians 5:7, for we walk by faith, not by sight. That's a calling. We walk by faith and not by sight. That is not the easy calling. It's easier to walk by sight, to what we have experienced, what we just came through, what we're comfortable with, to fall back on what we know. But we're called to walk by faith, the thing that we don't see. We know it's God's best for us. Are you willing to do something uncomfortable, to grow and to learn, to walk by the way in which we were designed to walk? I think there's a safeguard built in. If we walk by faith, we can be guarded and even protected from the distractions of this world. The practical defense is to walk by faith and not by sight. James in 2:18 makes it clear, show me your faith without works, and I'll show you my faith by my works. The simple answer is James is implying that faith requires action, to compel you to do something, to exercise that conviction in something worthy. We get the opportunity in life to put faith into action, to choose to worship and carry out faith over worry and distraction, choosing to reflect and remember on God and His character. What a perfect time in Advent to be mindful of the fear and the doubt that can creep into our life. But may we respond with deep, rich faith, of a conviction filled with courage, without fear and doubt, because we look at the manger, we see God with us, we see an object that is so more infinitely worthy of our faith. We remember 2,000 years ago, He came to fulfill thousands of years of promises to His people. But He chose to come as a baby, to come as Emmanuel, God with us. We remember that we are in between the already but not yet. Maybe you've heard of that. Jesus already came to defeat sin. He became embodied of the perfect faith, the object of our faith. But we look forward to the second time He comes with the ultimate victory over sin and death. But until then, we know that we have the power to not be riddled with fear and doubt, because we can walk by faith and not by sight. We can choose to worship over worry. We can choose to have faith over fear. I pray this Advent season, this Christmas season, that the enemy is powerless as he tries to distract us. I pray that we spend time clinging to the One who is infinitely worthy of our faith, God, and His character, as we study what He has done for His people, what He continues to promise to do for His people, as we study and remember Jesus, the essence of God's nature, the exact representation of God's nature, the author and perfecter of our faith this Advent season. Let's pray. God, we know that You are good, that You love Your people. From the beginning of the time, You had a plan to save Your people, and that You chose to do it through Jesus, through a God who chose to take on flesh to dwell among us. And we know that You chose to do that for our sake. Lord, I pray that as we study this season, as we set time aside to study your character and your word, Lord, I pray that we are drawn near to you, that we choose to operate out of worship and not worry, that we continue to put faith over fear because you are worthy of that, because you deserve that, and we know that it's because it's our best. So, Lord, I pray that we continue to practice that, we strive to know more of you so that we can choose faith over fear. In Jesus' name, amen.